my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Hey everyone, welcome once again to my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. Thanks for tuning in, listening, downloading, sharing, whatever it is that you do these days to get your podcast, whether it's through jitterymonkey.com and the hard work that Greg Mahochko puts on engineering this show each and every week. I appreciate it. And be sure to check out his show, Nerds United, right here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. Or if you're listening on iTunes, go ahead and rate, review, share. Let us know what you think of the show, good, bad, or indifferent. Really, it does not offend me. And I was told by one listener that I say as well too many times. So I've tried to cut back on that. So hopefully, and Chad's here with us today, so Chad will kind of keep me in check. And if I say as well too many times, he'll scale me back, maybe. He's not here to shock me or zap me or hit me with something. So, Chad, you'll have to give me a verbal slapping if I say as well, which now I've said it twice or three times already. So, kind of keep me in line, will you?
Okay. If I keep saying again and again, you can zap me.
So. Very good. Very good. Well, the meat of today's show is going to be about SummerSlam. Of course, we are still about 2 weeks out, so not the entire card has been set. We're going to talk about what we do know is happening and some of the speculation, some of the storylines that are playing out that will likely lead us to SummerSlam. But before we get in, and we'll talk about past SummerSlams as well and kind of share our memories on those, because Chad has been to, how many SummerSlams have you been to out in L.A.?
Two, 2012 and 2013.
Okay, I couldn't remember if you went last year too or not, so we'll kind of get some of the inside perspective because I've never been to a SummerSlam event. But before we do that, kind of talk about some of the goings-on in wrestling. And I wanted to talk again today, just for a minute or two, about the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper and some things that I didn't get into last week on the episode, which I think is episode 36. This is episode 37. I can't believe how long we've been doing this now, but anyway. Back in, I think it was March, it was right around WrestleMania time, I had written a blog about WrestleMania, the original one, which of course Piper was a part of that main event, and some things that were going on in my life. I was a 12-year-old kid at the time, and had lost a close friend less than a week earlier in an ATV accident, and I blogged about that and how WrestleMania, that Sunday, for the first time in almost a week, I wasn't obsessed with death and dying and thinking about my friend and whatnot, and how, you know, that moment or that, you know, that 2.5 or 3 hours of wrestling distracted me and, you know, helped with the grieving process. And I put it out there on social media and I tagged Rowdy Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan in it and didn't expect anything to happen. But Piper retweeted that and it got retweeted and liked and shared, and that blog got read a lot. So, and I want to believe that Rowdy Piper did more than just retweeted it. I want to believe, and I don't know that to be true, that he actually took the time to read it too, because that seems like the character that he had and the kind of person he was. Hearing stories this past week about him, that just seems like something he would have done. So in my heart of hearts, I want to believe that Piper took a look at that blog too and took the time to retweet it and share it with his followers. So for that, I will be grateful. And just another a piece of the puzzle of the man who was Rowdy Roddy Piper, and may he continue to rest in peace. And Chad, I didn't know if you wanted to say any more. I know that you had talked last week about your meeting with him a couple, 2-3 years ago out there in Hollywood.
No, I think I'm good.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just wanted to kind of get that out there too this week, because
I think I got my story out. I'm kind of disappointed. I didn't realize that Piper lived here in Hollywood. have been cool to run into him on the street, but sadly, I don't even... The only person I run into is Superman and Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, you don't get too many... Despite the fact that you're so close, you don't get too many celebrity sightings out there, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, but given where I have worked the last 6 months, I am surprised at how many celebrities actually are in my neighborhood. If I just walked outside, maybe I would see them.
Leave the house every once in a while.
Yeah, and don't go to Taco Bell all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you're going to find Brangelina hanging out at Taco Bell or whomever.
They go to Subway.
Okay, eating fresh, it's always important too. I do feel kind of disconnected from the wrestling world from time to time, especially now. I don't have satellite anymore, so I kind of watch the Raw recaps and SmackDown things online through WWE.com or sometimes on the app now. So I'm not as in tune with what's going on. I hear, and I haven't had a time to listen to the Paul Heyman promo from Raw last week. Did you have a chance to listen to that, and are you convinced that Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar is going to be a blockbuster for SummerSlam?
I did not. I missed Raw last week, and actually I've gotten to the point where I may watch like the Raw after a pay-per-view and just watch the pay-per-view, because otherwise you're getting the same thing week to week, and it's just kind of redundant, and I have other things to do. Real quick, though, one thought on Roddy Piper, I'm going to go back. I don't know if you've had the chance to check it out, but there's a new show on the WWE Network called Table for Three, and the first episode was put up, and I believe it's just a like dinner conversation moderated by Mean Gene, and the first episode is Mean Gene, Paul Orndorff, and Roddy Piper.
Oh, cool.
I was going to watch it this morning, I didn't get a chance to, but so for anybody who is not aware of that, they may want to check that show out.
I saw that there was talk of that happening, I hadn't seen it yet, so I'll definitely take a look at that as well.
But as to your question, as good of a promo person Paul Heyman is, I don't think there is anything that can be said or done to make me think Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar is in any way interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me ask you this, because I have a theory on why Undertaker is back, why this match is happening at SummerSlam, and why he is joining some of these tours. I think he's going to be on the tour of Mexico in the fall. I think, and pardon the pun, this is setting up for The Undertaker's last ride. I think that he is going out at WrestleMania 32. It's in his... I know he's from Death Valley storyline-wise, but he is from the Dallas, or at least from the Texas area. What greater send-off would it be in your own hometown or your home state in front of potentially 100,000 fans, there in Dallas? And I think that this is kind of a way of giving fans that last look. Like, this is going to build to a storyline at WrestleMania 32. At least that's what I hope it is. Not to say that I want The Undertaker to retire necessarily, but I think once the streak was broken... What else is there with The Undertaker? The mystique is almost over now, I think.
And especially for being a part-time...
Yeah.
You know, if he's only going to wrestle once or twice a year, what's the... Other than the appeal of seeing him, but... In full disclosure, I have not been an Undertaker fan over the last, say, 6 or 7 years.
Uh-huh.
For me, it's... His time has passed. Let him go out. Let's move on with the next generation. As we've discussed several times, at least on the blog, it's this WWE's holding pattern or nostalgia of trying to keep these older guys around much longer than needed hurts the current product, because no one is getting... Instead of trying to make a new... In this case, let's go with Bray Wyatt as an example, who could have been a potential new Undertaker for the kids growing up now, or the generation watching now.
Right.
It's oh, well, let's keep Undertaker around and not worry about building up Bray Wyatt. It's very detrimental to the growth of the company. And I don't want to sound too negative, because I think right now WWE has a wealth of talent, and they're seemingly starting to use some of them somewhat properly. But agree with you. I think this. I hope that WrestleMania 32 is Undertaker's last ride. I also hope that he does not face Brock Lesnar there. I don't. And getting back to SummerSlam, I don't understand the. I can understand the logic of Taker coming back and wanting to get revenge on Lesnar, but much like how Sting showed up 13 years after WCW went out, be like, oh, I'm mad that you took out WCW. It's like Undertaker waited a year, almost a year and a half, to come back after Brock, and when he was around at WrestleMania feuding with Bray Wyatt, he didn't, you know, there was no conflict or interaction with Brock, and then it was like, oh, did he just, like, one day wake up and be like, oh, you know what? Last year, Brock Lesnar beat me. I think I'm upset about that.
Yeah.
And then going into the match, it's if Taker wins, you just have your 50-50 booking where, oh, Taker has to get his win back. Yeah. And if Brock wins, it's like, oh, Brock just beat The Undertaker again.
Right. And, yeah, and I agree with you on the whole waiting a year. There could have been... The WWE does a good job from time to time of planting those little subtleties and the innuendos and the things that we don't necessarily see happening, but there were no hints or anything dropped during Brock's reign of terror, if you will, as the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. And I understand them, if they're going to do the 50-50 booking thing, not wanting to necessarily put the belt on The Undertaker. You know, a rematch with The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar didn't make sense, to me at least, storyline-wise, this past year at WrestleMania 31. You know, there were so many things going on with Brock, and he kind of monstered his way through everyone, so it didn't make sense for him to lose to The Undertaker, assuming that that's the path they're going to take. But they could have at least had little hints or things that led up to this SummerSlam match. Like you mentioned, 18 months later now, we're supposed to really think that The Undertaker is avenging a loss from then. And like you said, there was no mention at WrestleMania 31 of Undertaker being upset or bitter or whatever about the streak. So it'll be interesting to see, and I like you said, I hope they don't necessarily subscribe to the 50-50 booking thing, because then will we have a rubber match? And as we've both mentioned, we don't want that to be at WrestleMania. There's always Survivor Series, there's always the Royal Rumble, but right now they're putting this on or presenting this as, I guess, potentially the main event for SummerSlam 2015.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's... you would think the Seth Rollins, you know, a title match, especially if it is the match with Cena, title for title, would be a bigger main event. But I guess the appeal of The Undertaker happens... I don't know, this is not a match that in any way... If I did not have the WWE Network and we were still in the old pay-per-view era where you had to order the show, you know, separately, that match alone would not even make me consider buying the show.
Right. I agree. And you kind
of... I know I am very much not the target demographic, and there are still fans out there who love The Undertaker and are probably really interested in this match. I am just not one of them.
Sure. And you mentioned the potential of a title-for-title match, Seth Rollins versus John Cena. As of this recording, which we're recording this the weekend, the show will drop on Monday. That match hasn't been signed. I guess they're waiting for Cena to accept the challenge from Seth Rollins. I am kind of cringing with this, because if it goes the way things have been going lately with John Cena, I really don't want another WWE World title run from Cena. But if it happens, maybe he will then go on to do the honors for someone else and legitimately pass the torch. I feel like the torch is getting handed over for a little bit, but it's not truly been passed yet.
Yeah, I would think that I'm with you. I don't think Cena needs another run with the title, although I can see, you know, that's, Cena is the WWE's cash cow, so keeping him prominently in a, you know, position I can see their logic in that. It's just that I would think that if this match happens, there would be some type of screwy ending, or I should say TNA patented ending with ref bumps, disqualifications, whatever, to keep the titles on Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
And probably lead into another match next month and then a match after that. And then it goes back to what I was saying with Undertaker earlier, where Cena is at that point in his career where he could lose every single match from here until he retires, and it's not going to change a thing.
Right.
Still going to have his fans, they're still going to support him, but there's just something about the philosophy that he has to be kept strong, or he has to constantly, you know, he can never give up, he's got to overcome the odds, and it's really unnecessary now. It now should be the time where, you know, like with, you know, we mentioned last year with WrestleMania, he defeated Bray Wyatt, and look where Bray has gone since then.
Mm-hmm.
He defeated Rusev, look where Rusev's gone. Kevin Owens came in, defeated Cena in their first match, and everybody's like, oh, this is it, you know, Owens is going to be, you know, promoted up, and look where Owens is now.
Right.
And I mean, not to say, like, I don't want to be like, oh, Owens is being buried or anything, but I think matches with him and Cesaro and, well, I think they're adding Sheamus and Orton into that mix, which doesn't do much, but Owens has plenty of time to still be promoted, but it's like he comes in and then gets fed to Cena, and now he's just another guy on the roster. So,
and
yeah, I'm sure that as long as Cena's nose can take the match, I'm sure the match will happen, but it's, there really is no positive outcome for either man to win this match because Cena doesn't need the world title, Rollins doesn't need the U.S. title, and if they did, then it would just be aping off Ring of Honor's current storyline with Jay Lethal being both the ROH champion and the TV champion.
Right, and I agree, and I'm... By no means are we saying that John Cena is past his prime. He can't go. The guy looks great. He is the face of the company still. But what we're saying is we would like to see more than just these temporary guys kind of step in and then they're quickly back down the ladder, so to speak, and then Cena continues to be the prominent one, which we get. And eventually when someone does beat him and gets that rub, it's going to be the greatest thing ever. So... And maybe this is all part of the plan. You know, we're complaining for nothing, but you know, we want to make it clear that we're not John Cena haters. We're not bashing him or the WWE.
No, it's more the John Cena character. I have respect for Cena, both professionally and from what I've seen in his personal life with the, you know, the Make-A-Wish Foundation and everything he does. It's just the John Cena character needs to take a step back.
Sure, I agree. And you mentioned Bray Wyatt. We've talked about him a couple times. So let's talk about the tag team match that he assigned. He and Luke Harper taking on Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns. And it feels like to me, and like I said, I have been somewhat disconnected, but these are four guys who are very talented, even Roman Reigns, and they don't seem to have anything to do for them right now. So they're throwing them all into this tag team match, which it makes sense because they all have history together as tag team, obviously the Wyatt family and the Shield. I like the fact that they're kind of revisiting that. Obviously, Eric Rowan is out with an injury, so it was presumed that the Wyatt family was going to rejoin as a tag team unit at least. And I think the tag team scene right now is lacking. And there's not a whole lot for Roman Reigns right now. There's not a whole lot for Dean Ambrose right now. So I personally am digging the idea of making these two more permanent tag team fixtures and helping out the tag team division and helping four singles guys come back to kind of where they all started when they first got over big time in the WWE and kind of revisit that for a little bit and see where we go from there.
Yeah, I don't know if I fully agree. I think this is more of a, we don't know what to do with these guys, so let's just repeat the past. And which, again, it's not going to be a bad thing, and I think all four guys can deliver a decent match. It's just, I think it comes down to long-term booking, where they're like, okay, we didn't know what to do. We didn't know when the Wyatt family broke up, you know, all three members just kind of fell down the rankings. Like, there was no, none of them had anything meaningful to do. And so I was like, well, let's put them back together and see if we can recreate the dynamic that they had. I do like the fact that Ambrose and Rollins have kind of come back together just to play off their Shield history. Like, you know, Rollins was the one that turned on them. So when the Shield then split up and Reigns and Ambrose were off doing their own thing, it just felt weird that they would not have any interaction. You know, you come up together as a group and then all of a sudden you're complete strangers. So, and I think Reigns is definitely kind of rebounded from WrestleMania. I think the perceived backlash against him going into WrestleMania is gone. I think he is continuing to improve, and potentially next year at WrestleMania, should they want to put him back into a title match, I think the fans would be more willing to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, this just seems we've got these four guys that are over. Let's just throw them into a program with each other.
And speaking of programs, it looks like the Miz, Ryback, and Big Show program continues to move on, and we're getting that SummerSlam rematch as well. It's a triple threat for the Intercontinental title currently held by Ryback. This match, I think, or who was Ryback supposed to face at Battleground? Was it just the Big Show?
No, it was supposed to be a triple threat.
It was, okay. I couldn't remember if it was a triple threat or not. That match got postponed because Ryback was suffering from a staph infection, and has he been cleared? Has he been wrestling on Raw and SmackDown? I haven't seen him.
I haven't seen him, but I would assume that if they're promoting the match that he is cleared, because otherwise, you know, he was pulled off a couple days before Battleground, so it was unexpected, but now hopefully he's taken a Z-Pack and gotten in there. But this is another match where it's just kind of three guys not doing much. Let's just throw them together. Since Battleground, it's mainly just been Miz and Big Show, or Miz complaining about Ryback not defending the title, and Big Show coming out and punching Miz and beating him up for a while. Nothing has really moved this in a positive direction. It's kind of like been treading water until Ryback can come back.
Yeah, I guess I get that, and I think when it comes to the Intercontinental Championship, I mean, it's been a big part of SummerSlam in the past, and I've been doing an ABC, or an A to Z SummerSlam blog every day, and I happen to be the Intercontinental Championship, and talked about the rich history of that title, so you can check that out at my123cents.com, hashtag cheap plug, but to me, this match just doesn't have... I'm not big fan... I was a huge Miz fan. I'm back in the day. And
before
I feel like... What's that?
Before Neville came along.
Before Neville came along, yeah. But he has fallen so far by the wayside over the last, I don't know, year and a half, 2 years, that they've almost made it to where you can't cheer for the guy. I don't know. It's just my perceptions and whatnot have changed. But anyway, I'm disappointed. Disappointed is not the right word because it's not his fault. Daniel Bryan, of course, when he won the Intercontinental Championship, I thought was going to restore some of the prestige and the honor with that. And then Ryback winning it and then almost immediately not being able to defend it either. It just feels like the Intercontinental title is still just kind of a prop being used, and there's not a lot of, like, John Cena, I felt like, has done a lot with the U.S. title and bringing some value to it with the open challenges and defending it every week and whatnot, and against guys who aren't just, you know, ham and eggers. So I have high hopes for the IC title, but as long as it's kind of being defended in this little trio of guys, I'm not excited about it at all. I don't know if you had any other comments. That's that's the three matches right now that are signed. Of course, there's speculation, as we mentioned, on the world title match. I would imagine we'll get perhaps Owen, Cesaro, and then maybe Sheamus and Orton thrown into a fatal four-way, I guess?
Yeah, that's what I think I've read or seen speculation about. So you get that. I'm sure there'll be some tag team, either multi-man match or another primetime players versus New Day matchup. There's... And then some Divas... something or another with the three Diva groups that are competing, or a four-way, or the Bellas, let's see, it'd be the Bellas, the Bad, I think there's just three, right? Bellas?
Yeah, the Bellas, Bad, and the...
And then the no-longer-named sorority sisters, because that's a porn site, so...
What, did they come up with a new name for them? I thought they were talking about something, but...
What I've seen today is they're now PCB.
PCB, and what does that stand for?
Paige, Charlotte, Becky.
That's creative.
Yeah, so a lot of time was spent into this. I don't know if it's supposed to be a play on TCB, which would be taking care of business, or maybe someone's just smoking a lot of PCP and the creative department, so... Well, they should do a fans get a chance, a contest where fans get a chance to rename them, and then they can give away a house or something. In the 1990s WWE.
Didn't they do the name thing with Kofi and Evan Bourne?
I think they did. I think
and
that's right.
It was like Air Boom or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to talk about past SummerSlams. I don't know if you feel this way or not, but... Oh, there's also speculation that it's Stardust and the guy who plays the Arrow...
Oh, yeah, because he's going to be on Raw this week. So
...are going to wrestle, too. And I'm going to talk with our buddy Greg Mahochko over at Nerd United, who does the comic books. If you have ever had a chance, if you like comic books and comic book-related movies and whatnot, he podcasts about that. So we're going to kind of talk... I'll talk to him about some of the implications with that match, if it does indeed... get signed and happen. But anyway, Chad, I don't know about you, but for me, as a fan, we've both been fans for 30 plus years. Started watching generally the same time. I have a better recall of like the first probably four or five SummerSlams than I do the last four or five SummerSlams. And anything in that middle attitude era kind of stuff. I mean, I've been going online and cheating and kind of looking up some stuff just to remember what happened and to know what happened for these blogs that I'm writing. But, you know, like I can almost vividly remember and go down match by match, you know, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. And then after that, I kind of get fuzzy. So, and I don't know why that is. I don't know if it was because I was more entertained back then, if I had more time on my hands, I was looking at the wrestling magazines and, you know, memorizing and remembering things, or because I've had some of them on VHS and have gone back and watched them. But of course, I can do that now on the network. So what are your thoughts on the early days of SummerSlam, which became the third of the big four pay-per-views to actually become a pay-per-view?
Yeah, I agree with you. I definitely... I can't tell you full cards, but I can tell you the memorable stuff from the early SummerSlams than I can the more recent one, and especially anything from like 99 to 2007.
Yeah.
In fact, when you mentioned, when I brought up that I'd been to SummerSlam 2012 and 2013, I had to go and pull the DVDs off my case just to kind of refresh my memory of what happened. Because all I remember from 2013 is being seated behind a guy who had a sign that said, "Marry me, Bellas," and he kept holding it up the entire time. And finally, when I said, "Can you keep that down?" at the start of the Brock CM Punk match, he was like, "What? Am I not holding up high enough?" What? And I'm like, "No, your sign's stupid and annoying, and it has nothing to do with this match. Keep it down."
Did you really say that to him?
I didn't say that. I just said, "No, I'd like to see this match."
Yeah.
But yes, here's a quick side note. If you take a sign to a show, which I have nothing against signs, but one, be respectful of the people behind you. that realize you're blocking their view, and two, if your sign has nothing to do with the people in the match at hand, then keep your sign down. And also, if you're not in the front row, the people probably are not going to read your sign anyway, so you're pointless. But I remember, actually, I can remember SummerSlam 89 was the first year, 88.
Yeah.
I remember I was in Florida at the time visiting family, and I think I was watching Primetime Wrestling, and they had, and this was like 2 weeks out, I think 2-3 weeks out before SummerSlam, and I hadn't seen any wrestling lately, and they brought up the old event center, and with, I believe it was Sean Mooney. And
who?
And I think he said, SummerSlam coming up, blah, blah, and I was like, what is SummerSlam? What is this weird thing they're talking about? But I remember I don't know how long it was after the first one happened that I actually saw the show, because, again, being that they were only on pay-per-view and we did not have, where I live, we didn't have pay-per-view capability. I just remember seeing pictures in the WWF magazine and seeing recaps on Superstars and whatnot. So, but yeah, I can, I think it was more because I was a kid. I had less responsibility and less things I had to take care of back then, so I had more time to focus on wrestling. And I think storylines back then, because there wasn't a show every month and there wasn't live television week to week that they had to, really hype up in ratings, you actually got slow builds to story, and stories took time to build, so it stuck with you more. And now it's just like, in 3 weeks, this match is going to happen, and then 3 weeks after that, those people are going to go on to a different match, and there's no real consciousness of wrestling anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense. From those early days, what stands out to you? What were some of your favorite, I guess it doesn't have to be the early days. What are some of your favorite, if you have any, SummerSlam memories, moments, matches? What were the things that made you think, wow, this was awesome, or, reaffirmed your faith as a fan?
Well, I was trying to think about this earlier today because I have a bad wrestling memory. I can't remember specifics. I can just remember, things that happen out of context. But I think for me, the earliest memories, the big stuff, were the Macho Man Elizabeth wedding, the handicap match with Warrior and Hogan against Sergeant Slaughter, with Sid Justice making his WWF debut, and then I just remember, the one at Wembley Stadium with the mile-long entranceway, where I think half the time of the show was devoted to guys actually getting to the ring. and then, that, of course, the Legion of Doom coming out on their motorcycles with Rocco.
Yes. Gotta love Rocco.
Yeah. But yeah, it was, it was something interesting that they did to help. Instead of just having WrestleMania or SummerSlam or Survivor Series, it was done to kind of give you a big summer show, obviously. But yeah, I think it was a good addition at the time, and I kind of miss the days where it would be a bigger deal. And I like now that they're trying to turn it into a secondary WrestleMania. This year it's being 4 hours long. I don't think it will ever become that popular just because of the history and the way things are set up now. But, I'm trying to go through and think of, what are other key moments. And like you said, I can remember Mankind winning the title with Jesse Ventura. The Stone Cold Undertaker match from 98 was. And then, of course, Bret Hart versus Undertaker in 97, and I'm trying to think of what some of the stuff that happened on the undercards of those matches. But yeah, there's really been nothing in the last 10 years, especially from 2001, after the invasion angle, to about 2007, there's nothing that I could probably off the top of my head recall.
Yeah, for me, that during that specific period, and I've always just kind of remembered this just because I was a big Chris Benoit fan, and yes, I said his name. He defended and lost the championship to Randy Orton at 04. But beyond that, and without doing the research that I've been doing for these A to Z blogs, you're right. There's nothing in that time period for me either that kind of sticks out and stands out as memorable, or, you know, these were must-see matches, which is kind of you mentioned it being them trying to build it up like a WrestleMania of the summertime kind of event. And I just think that, you know, with WrestleMania, we could sit here and talk about each main event throughout the past 31 events that they've had. So I don't know that it'll ever get that status either. But for me, some of the big moments were, back in the day, I felt about Kerry Von Erich, the Texas Tornado, like I feel about Neville now. So he was the man to me. And when he came in and took the Intercontinental title from Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam 90, that was big to me. The Warrior beating Rick Rude in the cage match that same year. And it was kind of the first time that Hogan wasn't in the main event, even though they billed his match with Earthquake as a double main event. Ultimate Warrior beating Honky Tonk Man in 31 seconds at the first year for the Intercontinental title. I was a Honky Tonk fan, so I was disappointed with that outcome. Some of the tag team title matches that they had, the Hart Foundation very prominently a part of those. Chad mentioned Wembley Stadium, the main event being for the Intercontinental title that night, with Bret Hart defending against the Bulldog, and then Bret winning it at 91 SummerSlam. I lost $5 in that match because I was going for Mr. Perfect. So, those early years were great. And in recent years, I would say to me the one that kind of sticks out still is, and you were there for it, would be the Daniel Bryan John Cena match at 13. And even though I think we can agree that it was not the plan, but it's what happened, and so I'm going to give it kudos. That was the slow burn and probably the best build up to a WrestleMania in the last at least 5 years to me, with Daniel Bryan fighting the odds and going through the Authority and having to face Triple H in the undercard of WrestleMania 30, and then, you know, earning that championship match. And it all started with him getting screwed over at SummerSlam 2013.
Yeah, and even though it apparently wasn't the plan, I think it worked out and actually made a better story than whatever the original plan was going to be. But I remember being in the arena, like you said, and it was just when Daniel Bryan won the title from Cena, the place erupted, and then when Cena came out, or when Orton came out, Triple H gave Daniel Bryan the pedigree, Orton cashed in. It just kind of took the wind out of the arena. And I believe, like, I'm trying to think of 2012, the year before, had a similar situation where Punk had retained the title, and then did Nash jump in? Do you remember, was it at SummerSlam?
I'm not sure if it was SummerSlam, but yeah, that was, who was the, was Punk the champion at 12? Yeah, because he lost it to The Rock later, right?
Yeah, it was Punk versus Cena and Big Show in a triple threat. And I believe that Punk ended up winning, and then Nash came out of the crowd and jackknifed him, and that's when that led to the awesome Kevin Nash versus Triple H match.
Yeah, that was at TLC, wasn't it?
I believe so, yes.
But I think that was before.
Maybe that was Survivor Series that Nash came out.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it was.
I think that happened a year before in 2011. I think. But like we said, folks, we have trouble remembering the most recent stuff. And
well, it involves Kevin Nash, so I try to block it from memory.
Yes. Yes. Some of the other, and these are rhetorical questions that, as a geek wrestling fan, that pop into my head, and I don't expect answers for these, but some observations I've made of past SummerSlams. That year, Chad mentioned it in 91, when Hogan and Warrior teamed up against Sergeant Slaughter, Colonel Mustafa, and General Adnan. who Adnan was a manager, who had wrestled years before. But anyway, I'm curious as to why The Undertaker wasn't a part of that match instead of Adnan, because of The Undertaker's history with the Warrior. He had put him in the casket during the funeral parlor segment. There was a feud going on there before Warrior left, so, and Undertaker was not a part of that SummerSlam other than being with Jake the Snake when the Snake was revealed at the wedding reception for Liz and Macho Man. But anyway, I always wondered why Taker wasn't a part, you know, wrestling in that SummerSlam. He was already kind of that giant monster. Maybe that's, they wanted to protect him and not have him as a part of that losing team at that first SummerSlam, or that, at that particular SummerSlam.
And I think it would have been weird to have Taker, especially since he was still pretty much the dead man.
Yeah.
In there with a team of Slaughter and Iron Sheik. At least adding on, you know, his wrestling attire.
They all matched. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, and I get that. The other question, unanswerable question I have is, in 93 and in 90... Nope, take that back. In 94 and in 95, the Kings of the Ring from that year, Owen Hart and Mabel, went on to main event against the World Heavyweight Champion. They got title matches. Owen Hart and Bret, of course, in that classic steel cage match. Mabel in the not-so-memorable main event against Kevin Nash, Diesel, for the championship. But then in 96, a young upstart named Stone Cold Steve Austin wins the King of the Ring. He's not even on the SummerSlam pay-per-view. He is on Free For All wrestling
Yokozuna.
Former champion Yokozuna. He goes over, of course, but I just wonder why there was... That could have obviously, I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin caught on at that King of the Ring tournament, but he wasn't over like gangbusters and, you know, having those championship runs until about another year and a half later, I guess. So I'm just curious why they did some of the Kings of the Ring getting the title matches and others didn't. I think Brock Lesnar won the King of the Ring and then he wrestled The Rock later and beat him, so... You know, it's just one of the, like I said, I have too much time on my hands and think about things that are, you know, irrelevant now, but, you know, whatever. Save me here, Chad.
No, I mean, I think it all goes back to either planning or lack of planning, and I think Austin, even though he, you know, the Austin 316 took off at King of the Ring, you look at the trajectory of his career, it was another year and a half before he really, WWE really got behind him.
Yeah.
Promoted him. And, yeah, you know, now I'm just having flashbacks to Mabel and Diesel competing for the world title. So SummerSlam is... I don't know where I'm going here. Going back memory now to 94, I believe, which was the Owen versus Bret cage match, and Undertaker versus Undertaker, Diesel versus Razor Ramon with Razor. It was the first event in the United Center in Chicago, which WWE doesn't run. I don't know if they've ever done another show from there. They normally do the Rosemont Horizon, which is where, you know, we attended WrestleMania 22. Even though United Center is bigger and would have made more sense for WrestleMania. I'm trying to think of other memorable. I think it'd be interesting. I know there probably someone else has done this. It can easily be done with or researched via Google, but it'd be interesting to see. Excuse me, statistics from SummerSlam. To see who is, you know, the Mr. SummerSlam, who's got the best record, who's got the worst record.
Well, I can tell you that. I've actually done some of the research.
Yeah.
And the best record is going to be somebody that you will not ever hear about, at least in the immediate future. It's Hulk Hogan. He is 6-0 at SummerSlam. And he is the only one who is undefeated in that many matches at SummerSlam. Followed by the Ultimate Warrior, who was 5-0 at SummerSlam.
Interesting.
John Cena. I'm not going to remember who it all is, but I think it's John Cena, The Undertaker, Triple H, and Randy Orton. All may be tied for the most SummerSlam appearances. I think that's what I, if you go to my the SummerSlam A to Z, I mention it in one of the most recent ones. I'm up to the letter L now, so I don't remember which blog it was in, but I think it might be the Hulk Hogan blog, actually, that I can probably pull up here. But so there is a website out there that has statistically, like, everybody's SummerSlam records. It just tells you how many matches they've won and how many they've lost. It doesn't tell you who they've who their opponents or anything was, but let's see. Yeah, there's a 4-way tie for the most SummerSlam. Oh, I'm sorry, the most SummerSlam main event appearances. Cena, Triple H, The Undertaker, and Hulk Hogan all had 4. Hogan is the only one with the 6-0 record, and then The Undertaker is behind him at 5-0. Which actually, surprisingly, as I was doing this, and we're on the downslide here, but Roddy Piper never wrestled at SummerSlam.
Really?
Yeah, he made a handful of appearances, of course, because he had left in 87. SummerSlam that first year was in 88, so he was still gone. In 89 was actually his comeback when he interfered in the Rude Warrior Intercontinental title match. And then at 90, he was doing commentary. And then at 91, he was in Virgil's corner when Virgil wrestled and won the $1 million title.
Yeah.
And then at 92, we saw him play the bagpipes, cause it was at Wembley Stadium, but he was kind of inactive and then was kind of coming and going. And then of course left for WCW, but yeah, he never wrestled at a SummerSlam.
Things you only learn on my 123 Cents podcast, or if you Google wrestling stats.
Yes, assuming people are still listening at this point. So, Chad, is there anything else you want to wrap up or say as we get ready to say goodbye to our listeners this week?
I guess I'll throw in that due to some unforeseen circumstances, it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to attend the Jakara King of Trios tournament over Labor Day weekend. So I have 2 second row tickets to... They're a 3-day pass, include second row every single day of the tournament, plus free entry into the fan conclave. If anybody is interested in possibly purchasing these tickets, you can hit me up either at Chad Smart on Twitter or at my 123 cents on Twitter, and we can discuss that. Or if you know somebody that knows somebody who knows somebody who might want them.
Yeah, and the Chikara stars who have been on the podcast, some of our most listened to shows. So if you're a Dasher Hatfield fan or a fan of Gentleman Jervis Cottonbelly, they're sure to be a part of King of Trios. So
yeah, and also the BWO is reforming.
That's right.
Yeah, King of Trios, so who doesn't want to see that?
Lots of folks, I'm sure. Anything else you want to throw out there today, Chad?
No, I think I'm good.
Alrighty, well, for Chad Smart, I'm Kevin Huntsberger. Again, check us out at My123Cents on Twitter and find us on Facebook as well. Everyone, thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.